south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Hey, how about this for an email? Dear Johnny, a while ago in a show, you talked about how people chicken out on their life's goals and dreams and desires. Often they just shrug and give up. Most of us have grand plans when we're young, but we end up throwing in the towel because we have to get real and live our lives. I remember in that show, you talked about people's biggest regrets. I'll tell you mine. Number one, not learning to play a musical instrument. I mean, not just taking it as a credit in school, taking it seriously. Oh, I played in junior high school band and such, but clarinet, not so glamorous. It's okay for Woody Allen types, but let's face it, it's no chick magnet. My second biggest regret? Not learning another language. Though I did take that obligatory one semester, mine was Spanish, that you needed to get into university. I don't think they've got that requirement anymore, but you might remember, there was a time when you had to have taken a language to get into college. And my third biggest regret? Not traveling hardly at all outside the U.S. Now, I don't think anyone in your audience is old enough to remember this, but there used to be a TV commercial, very popular too. See the USA in your Chevrolet. Hey, wait a minute. Me, Johnny here. I think I've got that one. Listen to this.
See the USA in your Chevrolet. America's asking you to call. Drive your Chevrolet through the USA. America's the greatest land of all. On a highway or a road along a levee. Performance is sweeter. Nothing can beat her. Life is completer in a Chevy. So make a date today to see the USA and see it in your Chevrolet.
Hey, you'll never guess where that came from. But did you notice she said, America's the greatest land of all? Well, it may have been in the 50s. Anyway, our emailer goes on to say, I did get to see the USA. Nothing wrong with that. I did get to appreciate nature and got to see bears and otters and eagles up close and personal. But really, Johnny, one of my biggest regrets is that I did not get to travel much at all outside the U.S. And Johnny, I know you'd probably say Canada, Tijuana, and Cancun don't count, right? So Johnny, what I regret is not traveling as one should really travel. That is, getting away from the tourist spots and hanging with the real locals. Sure, luxury hotels, all-inclusive resorts, and cruises are awful nice. But I, too, am a firm believer that things are going down the toilet, and those kind of options just will not be available to too many at all in the future. That's why one of my biggest regrets is not going outside the country and hanging with the real people. So just recently, I took some baby steps and went to Mexico. No, not Tijuana. But to visit one of my friends who's got a condo in the Baja. So I did and found out he was in a pretty much all gringoized community, with most of them the over 65 crowd, which gets old pretty fast, even though I'm kind of up there too. But I like to think of myself as a 60 is the new 40 kind of guy. So I did venture out for 3 or 4 days at a time on my own, trying to meet up with the locals. Like you said, Johnny, in Mexico, it's kind of hard to find places where you don't run into gringos practically all the time. Except when you get to those tiny towns way out in the boonies. And for me, a dyed-in-the-wool city boy from New Jersey, I have to admit, unfortunately, life out in the boonies is a little bit too slow and laid back for me. I'm the kind of guy, Johnny, and I think you are too, that gets nervous just sitting around doing nothing. Seems like my mind's always running faster than my mouth, so I have to be doing something. Yes, I like looking at mountain sunsets and beaches as much as the next guy, but after a half an hour or so of that, I get kind of fidgety. It's that first world programming kicking in, I guess. So, alas, I did have good intentions. I came down to meet the locals, and what I found out about myself is, Johnny, no one can stand too much reality for too long, or at least I can't. So, I found out after a couple of days, strictly with the locals, I found I was craving gringo companionship again. So, I believe your advice is 100% right on when you say, if you're first moving down to Latin America, especially if your Spanish is rather poor, it's best to be somewhat near to a place where there are some gringos to mix with and hang. That purely off the gringo tourist trail stuff you talk about is probably just fine for people who can speak Spanish or have had enough of hanging around with gringos and are sick of them. I'm sure that can happen. But living completely with the native population, I don't know. Even in those nice, beautiful, first world-like areas, to be honest, that's not for me. Though I have to admit, I don't want to live in a gringo-wise tourist area either. I don't want to buy something and be stuck there. That's exactly the case of my friend who I was visiting. Living with a bunch of retired gringos? No thanks. That to me is artificial and it gets pretty old fast, too. So I think you pegged it just right, Johnny, by saying you live outside the tourist area, but close enough you can pop in once in a while to get your gringo fix. Plus, I found out as soon as you get to areas where you don't hear English anymore, the prices drop like a rock. So, Johnny, I am getting boots on the ground, even if it's in a country you don't much like. And since I've never been south of Mexico, as you call it, south of the border, I am coming down to your next expat seminar. Though, as far as the folks back home, I'm keeping it to myself. They got worried enough when I told them I was visiting Mexico. I can just imagine the riot act they'll give me if I told them I'm going to Guatemala. It's so true, Johnny. Americans don't want to face reality. They prefer to bond with their devices instead of people and amuse themselves to death. That, I think, is ultimately what's in store for everyone who tries to stick it out up in the first world. That's about all I have to say, Johnny. Hope to see you at the seminar. Should be signing up for it soon. Meanwhile, I'll keep on keeping on. Signed, Lester from Jersey. Well, thanks for that, Lester. I'll be looking forward to seeing you there. Just one comment, Lester. I can't emphasize just how different things are south of the border. Once you cross that border, and you're in Guatemala, Belize, Honduras, Nicaragua, and any of the countries south of Mexico, there's a whole different feeling, different atmosphere, different kind of lighter vibe, much more laid back. Almost all the cops are actually friendly and nice. The locals are absolutely less jaded. Except, of course, in places like Costa Rica, where the gringos have flooded in and pretty much morphed the place into something that's twisted and kind of perverse in a way. You know, saying that a place like Costa Rica is typical Latin country is like saying Las Vegas is a typical U.S. city. I mean, really, how many neighbors and friends do you have who say, yeah, I know Mexico, I've been to Cancun? It's like a visitor from Europe, Canada, Japan, whatever, saying, yeah, I know the U.S., I've been to Disneyland and Vegas. You know what I mean. Now, since Lester brought up my July Expat Insider Seminar, I know everyone wants to get in on those early bird discounts. That means you get $500 off the regular price if you're coming down to the seminar as a single. And if you're coming down as a couple or two people sharing double occupancy, you get $1,000 off the regular price, or $500 each. By the way, if you sign up as a couple or two people sharing double occupancy, I pass the entire hotel savings on to you. It's $1,000 less expensive than two people coming down as singles. Confused yet? Well, you won't be if you go to www.thenewexpat.com and click on Johnny's seminar link. There you'll get all the info and the sign-up details, and you'll see the early bird discounts explained too. And when you're there, you'll also find information on those famous John Galt pre- and post-seminar trips and how to kill two birds with one stone. That is, apply for Guatemalan permanent or temporary residency at the same time while you're at the seminar. A lot of people do that, you know, because Guatemala's got one of the best deals going on permanent and temporary residency, though it won't last. As for now, anyway, the paperwork and the hoops you have to jump through a lot easier than most Latin countries, and it's one of the least expensive options, too. For example, it's around $1,500 for a local lawyer to get you set up with permanent or temporary residency. Of course, you know, if you're fluent in Spanish and live here in Latin America, in whatever country, you could slog your way through the residency process yourself, and it'll cost you about half as much or less than using an immigration lawyer. And I'm talking about any Latin country now. However, it'll take twice as long, guaranteed, and you'll spend 20 or 30 hours, on average, standing with your finger up your butt in various government lines. So do bring a couple of books and one of those booster batteries for your smartphone. That's a fact, and there's hundreds of gringos and expats that'll testify to that. Of course, even if you hire a Latin lawyer to take you through the residency process, again, in whatever Latin country, you'll have to stand in some lines and visit some government buildings. And I'd say your maximum combined time standing in government lines, 2 to 4 hours. Still no picnic, but that's as opposed to 20 or 30 hours if you're doing it all by yourself. By the way, you'll never be able to do it by yourself if you don't have fluent Spanish. Just a little heads up there. Oh, I just checked another Latin residency program that's quite easy and fast to accomplish. The Dominican Republic. You may have heard it's an easy go. Of course, they change things all the time, but right now it's an easy go. Then, of course, you have to hire a Dominican attorney, and that'll cost you, on average, $3,500. More than twice as much as going through Guatemalan residency. Plus, since Guatemala City is the largest city in Central America, the airlines are connected through all the big airports up in the States. Whereas if you're going for residency again in the Dominican Republic, you have to fly into Santo Domingo, so you almost always have to make a change in Miami. And since there aren't that many flights from the U.S. to Santo Domingo, you'll always pay a couple $100 more than you'd pay for a round-trip flight from a big U.S. airport to Guatemala City. Now, you know, some people come down to the seminar just to take advantage of the residency option. Then again, about half the people coming down just want to go to the seminar. And their goal, of course, is to get some high-quality boots on the ground, see what the Altiplano is all about, make some new like-minded friends, and some excellent personal and professional contacts. Oh, and remember, previous seminar attendees, coming back again as repeat offenders, get $1,000 off. We always have repeat offenders, you know? Now that speaks volumes, doesn't it? And don't forget, everyone who signs up gets a free 1 hour one-on-one phone or Skype consult with me before the seminar. All right, here's a news flash. You know, there's all that talk about gun violence up in the States. I mean, you've got round-the-clock news blips about guns, gun owners, gun legislation, the NRA, and of course, so-called assault weapons. Speaking of assaults, there's a news flash out of London this week. It says, a surge of stabbings in London was blamed Monday for the city overtaking New York's monthly murder tally for the first time in modern history. Then it says 15 people were murdered in London during February compared to 14 people murdered in New York in February. That doesn't seem like a lot. Hell, in Chicago, there's that many murders every time there's a commercial during the Oprah show. But I digress. But not much, you see. What people are completely missing in all this gun hoopla is that England's got some of the toughest gun laws in the world. You just can't have one. Unless, of course, you're a member of a prestigious old man's hunting club, you know. In fact, most cops can't carry one. So then what do deranged Londoners do? They stab people. In fact, there's so many stabbings going down in England that, get this, in 2015, British politicians passed a two-strike law. You've heard of the three-strike law in the States, right? Well, England's got a two-strike law. That's an automatic jail sentence for people caught carrying a knife during the commission of a crime. Might that include butter knives or Swiss Army knives or those little plastic knives they give you at McDonald's and Taco Bell? Hey, I'm not kidding. England has a two-strike law for possession of a knife. Well, as expat Eddie always says, where there's a will, there's a weapon. Wish I'd have thought of that. On a lighter note, you'll find when you move or visit down here in Latin America, they don't have daylight savings time. Why? Because there's no daylight to save. Since most Latin countries, except for the southern parts of Argentina and Chile, are in very temperate, even tropical zones, very much closer to the equator than you are in the States, you'll find all year round the sun generally rises and sets within the same approximate hour, or thereabouts. For example, if you happen to be located in Managua, Nicaragua, sunrise around 6 a.m., sunset around 6 p.m. And that's the way it is pretty much through all of Latin America. And that, believe me, does screw up gringos and expats who are used to daylight savings time, especially if you're making calls or doing business with people up in the States. Now, about that strange coincidence where the sun rises at 6 a.m. and sets at about 6 p.m., I'm from Chicago, and remember when I was in grade school, during the dead of winter, sometimes the sun would set at 4:30 in the afternoon, and even by 3:30, it was getting quite dark. And in late June, the sun would set around 8:30 at night. Definitely excellent for unsupervised neighborhood sandlot baseball games. Of course, if we did that today, children's services would call the cops on our parents. But I digress, though not much. Just remember, you'll get none of that variation here in Latin America. So you better plan your road trips wisely, because remember, if at all possible, you do not want to drive at night. No, not because you're going to get stopped, held up for ransom, or kidnapped. It's all about nighttime road hazards and visibility. Because generally, the roads, especially out in the boonies, are badly lit. They've got some man-sized potholes out there and gigantic unmarked tumulos, you know, speed bumps that'll tear out your oil pan. Oh, and you can forget about guardrails, safety warnings, barricades, and such if there's any kind of road work going on. And there's always work going on. Not that you won't find warnings or guardrails. It's just that there's no consistency, especially out in the boonies. But back to this sunrise-sunset thing. Now, all us first-world people are conditioned to setting our alarms. I mean, that's first-world life, right? Most of us live in 15-minute segments. And doctors, of course, in 2-minute segments. And you know what baffles me? People wearing watches. Why? Since every electronic device we have has a clock in it. From your refrigerator to your coffee maker to your hairdryer. So what are watches for? Ego? Show? Fashion accessory? Yeah, more than likely. Now, as far as getting up in the morning, I always had kind of my own built-in alarm clock. I'm sure some of you listeners do, too. Now, I'm here to tell you, if you live out in the boonies or even slightly out in the boonies, or for that matter, have a decent-sized garden anywhere you live here in Latin America, you just might have what I have. A daily ornithological wake-up call, a fine, feathered window pecker or two. I've got it figured out. Early in the morning, they see their own reflection in the window, right around sunrise, and they try to communicate with their own reflection by pecking away at it. And that's my 6 o'clock wake-up call every single morning. However, some bird species aren't always on the money, and they have their migration patterns too. So, as it turns out, at least in the house I'm in the coffee fields, I've got 3 different bird species rotating through every year, each of them waking me up at a slightly different time in the morning. For example, right now, I have this one bird and his mate, gray with a pure yellow stripe down his head like a mohawk, tapping on the window at precisely around 6 in the morning for about 4 months a year. And then when they migrate off wherever they go, a pair of almost fluorescent orange birds take their place. And man, are they striking. Speaking of striking, they strike the window around 6:30 for the next 3 or 4 months. By the way, a season here in Latin America is called a temporada in Spanish, temporada. And sometimes they'll use the word estación, like station. So anyway, I've got these fluorescent orange birds tapping away at 6:30 a couple of months of the year. And when they're gone, another pair of birds settle in, kind of a soft yellow and blue color. And they do the 6:30 in the morning window tapping rounds too. And if that's not annoying enough, those guys like the window so much, they come back 2 or 3 more times a day and start pecking away. Of course, they all leave a telltale mound of doo-doo on the window perch. Yet another reason I'm glad I have a maintenance guy slash gardener. So just a heads up there if you live out in the boonies, have a big garden, or you're close to a wooded area or a stand of trees. Speaking of peckers, the ornithological kind, that is, we've got some big trees out here and some very big woodpeckers. Thank God they're not into pecking on windows. But man, they can kick out the jams and the decibels when they're going at a tree. Sometimes, when they're close, sounding like a small caliber machine gun, really. By the way, we call them woodpeckers, but Latinos call them carpinteros. Carpintero, spelled like carpenter. Hey, makes sense, right? Wood, tree trunk, carpenter, carpintero. By the way, I know a few other gringos and gringas living out in the boonies, and it's pretty much the same thing. They've got their own birds pecking at the windows at 6 or 6:30 in the morning. And I don't mean like an Alfred Hitchcock movie. I mean just 1 or 2 birds pecking away. And you know, when I tell people about that, sounds kind of cool, connecting with nature like that, right? I know, you're thinking, why can't that happen in Cleveland? Well, you know, it's amusing for a while, but sometimes you really want to sleep in, and those birds just won't let you. Not exactly trouble in paradise, but annoying for sure. Be careful what you wish for and all that. But, sadly, the more windows you have, the more likely it is, at certain times of the day, for birds to be deceived and sucked in, not by their own reflection, but by the reflection of the sky. Which is why you'll find almost everyone who's got substantial windows has substantial bird casualties. Even I have a bird casualty once or twice a month myself. Oh, and you'll know when it happens, that sound, that certain thump. At my place in the coffee fields, I'd say about half the birds die and half recover. A lot depends on how fast I get to the scene of where they're passed out. That's why when I hear that thump, I don't dilly-dally. If it's still breathing, I'll pick it up, wrap it up in an old shirt or sweater so it stays warm. And more often than not, when I come back to look at it in a half hour or so, it's gone. Now you might ask, why do I bother to pick it up at all? Well, if I don't, one of the dogs will find it and parade it around like a trophy hanging from his mouth. And you know, that's not quite conducive to the chances of that bird's survival. What I mean is I'm not the only one who knows the sound of the thump when a bird hits a window. The dogs know that thump too. So it's always a kind of a race to see who gets it first. Me or the dogs. Because, you know, if I get there first, I got a 50% chance of survival. And if the dogs get there first, there's a 100% chance they won't. So do remember, especially if you're going to live out in the boonies, the more large windows you have, the more bird casualties too. I know, it's a sad thing, especially when it's a real colorful tropical species that's just bit the dust. Which begs the question, why should that be? Why is it we're much more sad and it's such a shame when a tropical bird smacks a window and bites the dust, as compared to a muddy, gray little finch? Which brings to mind that old saying, beauty's not everything, but it does open doors, not windows. Or something like that. All right, switching gears here. How about a little irony? How about a lot of irony? You know, one of the biggest bits of mainstream news right now, it's on all the channels, is that caravan of illegal immigrants heading for the U.S. They say there's around 1,200 of them. Well, how's this for irony? According to the Daily Wire, when the caravan crossed the Mexican-Guatemala border with mostly Hondurans in the group, the group's leaders praised Mexican officials for stepping aside and allowing them all to enter. And they all celebrated that as their first little victory with hundreds of little posts on Facebook. Funny, they're down and out and destitute, but they all got Facebook, huh? But here's what they didn't tell you. The Mexican Foreign Ministry said the caravan, made up mostly of people from Honduras, Salvador, and Guatemala, turns out later on, once they were deeper into the country, Mexican officials did check paperwork and found 400 of them, did not have passports or papers in order, and were subsequently deported back to their countries of origin. With the Mexican Foreign Ministry saying, that is our strict legal framework. You cannot enter our country without the proper paperwork. Say what? Insert belly laugh here. Isn't it funny? Mexico does not want illegal immigrants in their country, so if you get caught without the right paperwork, you get deported. According to strict Mexican immigration policy, they don't want poor, uneducated people with no skills emigrating into their country and utilizing Mexico's resources. But they'll gladly look the other way and permit millions of their own uneducated, unskilled countrymen to exit their country and slip into the U.S. illegally. So why is that? Well, it's about the money. Isn't it always? I've heard high-level Mexican officials say that off the record at parties and such. They say Mexicans up in the States are sending back billions in remesas, and those remesas have become a fundamental part of the Mexican economy. In fact, newspapers in Mexico have published data saying that 1/3 of the Mexican economy is directly or indirectly related to remesas coming from the States, 1/3 oil, natural gas, and other legitimate enterprises, and 1/3 directly resulting from the narco trade. Speaking of oil, gas, and narcos, listen to excerpts from this article. It starts out, the first call I got was in February 2015 from someone claiming to belong to the Michoacan family drug cartel. They said they knew who I was, said Alberto Arendando, who got a call at work. Turns out Roberto is an oil pump technician at the National Oil Refinery in the central Mexican city of Salamanca. They wanted information, he said, about my job, about the pumps, about the oil. Then he said, over the next few years, he was hounded, kidnapped, pistol-whipped, and stabbed so severely that surgeons had to remove his gallbladder. So he continued to give the cartels details on which fuels were going to be pumped and through which pipelines. It goes on to say, since the U.S., Mexico's biggest drug customer, is now legalizing marijuana, etc., Mexico's drug cartels have splintered and are eager for new sources of revenue. And why not? Cartels have found the oil smuggling and stealing business much more profitable than drug trafficking because there's a lot less risk and no international police interference or international lawbreaking. As one involved narco said, look, we don't have to risk crossing the border and paying off people. We're hauling gas and oil, legal products everyone uses. We're not hauling drugs. Wow, how about this? It says a May 2017 study commissioned by the Mexican National Energy Regulation Department found out that thieves in Mexico had tapped those pipelines roughly every 0.86 miles, that's 1.4 kilometers, meaning every single mile along Mexican's Pemex Company 14,000-kilometer pipeline has been illegally tapped into. That's around 13,000 individual illegal taps. According to that study, it says Mexican refineries have accumulated annual operating losses of $5 billion a year. The crude oil and natural gas themselves bring Mexico a lot of profit. Meanwhile, the refineries are operating at a loss. Then it says police routinely find mutilated corpses of refinery workers that are suspected fuel thieves or involved in gang rivalries. Mexican officials declined to mention the extent of the problem. In fact, it says one of Mexico's famous legendary singers, José Alfredo Jiménez, wrote a famously sad song about the Mexican oil business because one of his own brothers died under mysterious circumstances working for the state refinery. Then the article talks about how the narcos bribe refinery workers. Turns out they earn around $100 a week as laborers. But for $200 extra a week, you can work a clandestine job as a lookout or informant. It says one of the most common ways to steal oil is to become a fuel tapper. At night, you go to an isolated area where the pipeline runs, dig a trench, put in a hose, bury a long section of it, perhaps 3 kilometers to a nearby ranch, tap the main pipe on the underside of it, where it touches the ground and can't be seen. When you're done, rebury the equipment and re-smooth the terrain. It says some of the tappers are so good at their work, one particular area that was tapped almost every night ran for 4 years undetected. Then the article says there are lots of independents too. In other words, you can steal oil, get your own small gang, and sell it, but you'll have to make a deal with one of the big narco gangs like the Zetas. In other words, you have to get permission and you'll pay them a bounty for protection. For example, 3 pesos for every stolen liter of fuel. That would mean the independents pay around 50 cents a gallon to the Zetas. By the way, regarding narcos, especially the big players, you know, these guys are extremely macho. Many of them like to emulate the bad guys in John Wayne movies. Now, some of these guys, when they get enough money and power, they want to become legends. They know they might die at any time. There's always rivalries. So they'll hire famous Mexican ranchero bands, you know, the guys with cowboy hats and accordions, the out-of-tune brass section and the drunk tuba players. Anyway, they're known for hiring these guys to actually write songs about them, to manufacture a kind of mythology, so that when they croak, they'll play the song or songs at their funeral, and the pueblo they come from will keep the memory alive every time there's a dance party or wedding. No wonder these guys have the biggest, most chromed out, and foolish looking cars and pickups. That's why in Mexico there's a huge market for Tahoes, Suburbans, and Hummers, even though they don't make them anymore. Oh, and in the end, the article says Pemex technicians and pipeline workers are showing up dead all the time. So, what can we gather from all this? The big question is, do you still have Mexico in your sights for that plan B? Hey, 1.5 million gringos can't be wrong, huh? You've been listening to the Expat Files Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own plan B, you can schedule a one-on-one phone call with me. But first, download my free plan B questionnaire at www.thenewexpat.com. Better yet, if you want to get your plan B going from right up there in the States, just sign up for my 9-hour Expat Essentials course. Get the perfect plan B blueprint by going to theexpatfiles.com/academy. Nos vemos!